Welcome, everybody, to the Exit Velocity Podcast. Tonight, I am your host, Jordan, and we also have our guest host, Jason, on the line. How are we doing tonight, Jason?
Good, Jordan. Happy to be here. I know it was a last second ask to kind of jump on, and luckily, you know, I had some free time to talk some fantasy baseball, so let's do it.
Yeah, it was a slight adjustment. Our host, the lead act, Brent, was a little soft and is in the sheets already, so we had to take the wheel, and we'll go from there. So this week, what we wanted to discuss, so we've covered CBS rankings in recent week, last week, and the week previous to that, we went over ESPN ranks and what Tristan had to offer and say. So with this week, Yahoo actually started their baseball leagues, and we now have all that they have to offer in their rankings. So we have the GB League. You and I are both members of that league, and we are excited for a draft that's upcoming on March 13th. Going over the draft, so we've already updated our keepers, what's available, and overall, I guess I would just ask you first, Jason, what do you think of the rankings, if there's any immediate takes right away?
No, slowly digesting the rankings. I know with kind of football coming to an end, I'm always a big football guy. So it's kind of one of those things after, you know, football's all done, that's kind of when I'd really take the big leap of faith and, you know, what's going on in the baseball world. But haven't really got to digest too much. But I know kind of just looking around the certain – I've been doing kind of, you know, position by position breakdown to kind of see, you know, who do I like based off rankings. Kind of, you know, after looking at, you know, the short season that we had, how does that come into play as I analyze different guys? Also then doing another look back at, you know, more of a 2019 look at how guys did, just because small sample size is only going to do so much. So I think there's going to be a lot of guys that, you know, did see large leaps in their rankings. I think one guy I'd like to call out in that case is Mr. Randy from Tampa Bay. I think, you know, he could be a guy where people start to, you know, gravitate to just because of the playoff run he had, and, you know, rightfully so. But I think you're going to also get a lot of guys that are going to get caught up in a lot of, you know, potential discounts. I mean, like one guy I noticed at, you know, shortstop, like Carlos Correa, I saw, you know, based on rankings, he was 126. It's like, you know, obviously with Springer gone, he's going to, you know, go up a little bit in lineup. I know Tucker will probably, you know, fulfill, you know, kind of where Springer was batting, but just an interesting guy, you know, with shortstop being such a deep position. So I know we can dive into it. I don't know what you have as takes or how you want to handle kind of the flow of, you know, if we want to tackle position by position or just overall, but, you know, yeah, it's going to be interesting.
It's good to get your dive in right away. So I know you mentioned Carlos Correa and his rank being as far down as he already is. And I guess when we were talking before the show about, I mean, in my relation with Carlos Correa's Corey Seager and like that type of prospect pedigree and how they're both, I mean, big time name guys and obviously injury prone in the past, but I honestly think that's a discount for Carlos Correa. So that's a big, I feel like, steal late in drafts, especially, I mean, I know we don't have keepers like you, Jace. So if you want to go ahead, we'll talk about your keepers. So giving the listeners a rundown of our league, we have a 12 team format. We keep four guys and then we keep an NA guy. So a prospect that can carry over that obviously hits the batting at-bats and the pitching innings pitch requirements. But what are your keepers in this league? And then we can go on from there.
Yeah, no, I'm a very fortunate one when we kind of look at the keepers. So historically, over the last few years, I've been able to keep Mookie Betts and Juan Soto just because early investor in those guys, kind of, you know, took a chance on them, you know, before they had their pop. I remember I actually picked up Soto in the free agents the night of he got called up, you know, at his major league debut. So that was kind of, you know, one of those ones. It's like, I didn't even know who he was at the time. It's one of those things like, all right, you know, I got this Juan Soto. Next thing you know, you learn he's basically now, you know, if you're thinking dynasty, he's arguably, you know, maybe one of the, you know, top picks, but now even in redraft formats, you're seeing him, you know, float to the top in that perspective. But after those two, I made some big trades to land Christian Yelich and Lindor last year as well to kind of shake up the foundation of the team I had. I had some other good keepers prior, but I really wanted to kind of, you know, just mix it up a little bit and kind of see, you know, the one thing I'm kind of a little down on is, you know, when thinking about the keepers I have, outfield's one of the deepest positions in baseball. So it's like, you know, I already have that filled. And then shortstop, I would say, is the second deepest position. So it's like, you know, now you have to really make sure when we do come around draft time, it's like, okay, first and second and third, got to make sure I hit those spots or else, you know, you're basically going to be dumpster diving in the free agency all year. So,
yeah, rock solid, though, as far as those trades go. I mean, what'd you have to give up or tell listeners, I guess, like what you acquired last or how that kind of broke down and how you got all four guys on your team?
Oh, God, I don't remember. I remember the Yelich trade. I had to give up Gerrit Cole. So, I mean, when you think about it, two guys that are kind of paired in that, you know, high tier, you know, so almost a first round pick for a first round pick. I think at the point in time, it was, you know, yeah, in the middle of the kind of the COVID season that we had. So, you know, it was a very short season. So I would say, you know, giving up Cole for that, it's like, 50, you know, it's, I would look at it as a wash unless, you know, you favor batting over pitching, depending on, you know, how what your team is, you know, built on. But the Lindor one was a very, you know, unique one. It was kind of the way my team was structured. I kind of just sold all the assets that I had that I didn't need to a team that was kind of more competing than I was. So I was like, you know, how can we, you know, get a top, we'll say 15 player, you know, depending on where people have Lindor ranked, you know, to give up, you know, guys like, I know Walker Buehler was in that deal at that point in time and a few other ones, but it's kind of, you know, how do I just make that next upgrade? And I mean, not like downgrading Walker Buehler by any means. I just felt like at that point in time, Lindor had, you know, more keeper appeal. Cause I think Walker was injured too. He was kind of battling I think he had a blister last year. So he's battling that injury. So I was like, I didn't feel comfortable. So I was like, did that. So, I mean, now looking at how things are ranked now, you could say, you know, they're both 50-50 spots, you know, depending on what you value more, if it's hitting or pitching. So.
Yeah. So, I mean, definitely like the fact that you already have the outfield position covered. So it's like, check that off the list. As far as you gearing up for the draft, what do you think like your biggest need? So obviously you have four hitters and you've got your prospect is Ian Anderson. Do you then address pitching or what do you think what's your route? Like, what do you strategize as far as keeping four hitters and then having a pitcher prospect?
Yeah, I think for me, when I look into kind of just, you know, what's available based on how people kept in the league that we do a lot of our focus on outside of the other leagues that we participate in, I think the one position that I really like to really try and snag a player of good value is, first off, you know, if you can get JT Realmuto, I think that's, you know, one asset that you just can't look away from. I think, you know, if you were to compare him to football, I think, you know, he's the Travis Kelce of fantasy baseball. Like, no one's even close to his tier right now. I mean, obviously, I guess in the football world, you have Kittle and Waller. But, like, in baseball, it's like next closest guy is almost, you know, Gary Sanchez. And it's like, if I had Gary Sanchez, I'm not upset. But it's like, if I have the opportunity to have JT Realmuto, I'm going to take that every day of the week. So I think he'd be kind of a player I really would want. Well, aside from that, I think, you know, a valuable first baseman is, you know, it goes a long way. I think, you know, over the years, it feels like that position has slowly kind of went down. So, you know, if you look at the top 12, it's kind of like, you know, it's kind of, you can secure one of those guys, it just makes your team that much better. And then for me, I think, you know, when I think about pitching, since I don't have any pitchers right now, and as I attack the draft, I think I'm just going to really try to, you know, look for those kind of 2-3 starters that, you know, have the capability of having high K9, quality start potential, and so forth. I think, you know, you can always find pitching somewhere. I mean, it's nice to have the studs, but if you're capable of, you know, finding the next guy that, you know, can rise in the rankings, and basically you can kind of flip those guys for, you know, let's say a package deal for a Jack Flaherty, then, you know, then you're kind of, you know, you're in a good spot.
So going back to the foundation of your team, and I think, so what I want to do in this show is just kind of talk about the guys that are kind of listed, who we have available in our draft, because they're fringy players. There are guys that are obviously not kept in leagues. And in our 12-team format, we keep four guys. This is who remains. So I mean, going down the list of all the guys. So one of the guys that you had the option to keep, you didn't because your team offensively is stacked, and that is Kyle Tucker. We'll get to that later. But those guys are kind of at the top end of the list, and I think we can kind of break those down as we go. And I think that's kind of like the right strategy. How do you feel about that, Jason?
Yeah, no, that works perfectly fine. I think, you know, it's just kind of highlighting, you know, those players, and I think you can also kind of mention, you know, kind of what route would, you know, kind of lean towards based on, you know, how the team you built. I think one thing I wanted to highlight too, kind of mentioning how, you know, we both have different perspectives on how I have kind of all hitter emphasis, and then you have more of a pitcher emphasis on your team structure right now.
Yeah.
I think the one reason why I always gravitate to that model is just because I think if you have a very hitter lineup, that's just like when you look at it, if it's a 12-man, 14, 16-man, even a 10-man league, I think if you have, you know, the best hitting team on paper, it just has that opportunity to always kind of, you know, especially in category leagues, always kind of go back and win. I think, you know, if you just have your pitching, you know, set up to basically maybe win one or two categories, then you kind of put yourself in a position to say, all right, you know, I'm punting these four pitching categories. If I can go win, let's say K9, and we'll kind of, you know, really correlate well with K9, maybe
ERA
saves, you know, maybe saves or whatever it may be, you know, like in that case, you know, you hit your minimums pitch and all that stuff. I'm not a big relief pitcher guy in general, but like in this case, we'll just use that. If you have your team set up to that case where it's like you're basically projected, you know, win 7-5 every week, you know, you're in a great spot, like especially when it comes to, you know, the playoff time. You know, I think that's what I always try to do. It's like I'm not going out to win 12-0 each week. I never try to design my team that way. I think if you try to design your team that way, it's not going to ever work.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things where it's like, you know, I try to go heavy on bats because, you know, you're always going to be able to find that one spot start, you know, here and there from time to time. So it's like if you just have, you know, crystal clear bats, it's like I've never had to touch this batting lineup ever, then it's like, okay, I can always focus my energy on, you know, who's pitching Wednesday of that week, or, you know, who's kind of, you know, pitching good lately, to really kind of figure out what diamond in the rough you can find.
Yeah. And that's actually one thing. So instead of going to the rankings right away and kind of the breakdown of what's available in our draft, breaking down like the strategy, obviously. So like for me, and I think this is kind of like what my goal is, I guess, or objective is for 2021, is going or maintaining that pitcher route. So I think like going against the grain as far as like what some might say. And I mean, so honestly, like what we do is in any game, right, is stream pitchers, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, but you see all these hitters that are just red hot on the market, but no one, they're always just there available, waiting to be picked up, and we don't take them. Like, and that's in the history of this league going on, this is 11th year. Like those hitters, there's always like a top 100 hitter just sitting there, or like a top 100 overall player available to pick up. But I think those hot hitters is something like I've never even been interested in picking up in recent years, or like basically my whole fantasy baseball career. But I was thinking, like, strategizing of how I could like do like the Joe P approach, as far as like what could like be something like different, because there's a guy in our league who's went, what, how many relievers is he? He just runs the saves category of the league. Like he just runs saves. Like, so he drafted like 3-4 elite closers, and then that's how he won. And I think he got like top 4 finish that year, right? I could be wrong.
Yeah, no, and I think, you know, he was able to really, it's almost like I don't want to say cheat the system, but kind of that small loophole where, you know, there's a lot of relief pitchers that are, you know, closers, just because, you know, at first they maybe started as a starting pitcher or whatever maybe it was.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, he could fill, you know, his relief pitching spots and then obviously the util pitcher spot. But then he was able to also fill his starting pitcher spots when his starters weren't starting. So it's like at one point or given time, he had, you know, six closers just chilling in the lineup. So it's like, you know, he could rack so many saves up. And it, hey, it worked to a certain degree. I think, you know, the one thing at that point in time he lacked was kind of that, you know, he had that foundation, but he didn't have, you know, the other categories just kind of like locked in. You know, it was like he had good opportunities, but he just wasn't going to, you know, if he ran into an even stronger lineup, you know, it just wasn't all there.
Yeah. So like we run a head-to-head league and the six pitching categories are innings pitched, ERA, K9, WHIP, quality starts. And I think that's where it comes down to, like, so his strategy, he had SPRP eligible players. He picked up every SPRP eligible player that there was on Yahoo. And I think that's what he ran with. So he punted on innings pitched and he punted on quality starts, but he coveted on ERA, K9, and WHIP. And that's just kind of how he did his business. So going back to like my strategy for this year, kind of just going against the grain was kind of just like maybe having the mentality of going the pitcher route, pitcher heavy, and kind of just streaming hitters. Because I would say as far as hitters go, it's, I mean, if you stream a hitter, it's only going to do you so, like, it's a cold streak for any hitter in baseball. Whereas like a streamed pitcher could really screw your whole week. I mean,
yeah, okay. I'm sure
you've been there. We've all been there as far as like picking up a streamer that you think is going to be good and just gets absolutely shelled. And you're like, what? And then you're done. You know, it just screws up, skews all the stats in the week and you're done. And I think that's kind of like what my mentality was. And I'm curious to see what any people want to say back to this if they were listening. But it'd be curious to see what people's take is, because going that way, being all as far as like elite pitchers go and then kind of streaming pitchers, because my only keeper hitter wise is Bo Bichette, and that's not much. Like, it's a very questionable value, you know? Like, yeah, there's upside there, but shortstop, like, I don't know. It's all up in the air. That's why I love draft day so much, because anything can change as far as like who's available. My draft strategy will change by pick. It's all about how the dominoes fall, man.
Yeah, no, I'm 100% in that same team where it's like, you know, you basically say, all right, I'm going to go get XYZ. And then next thing you know, it's draft day, draft's over. And you look at your team, you're like, what happened with what I wanted to do versus what, you know, kind of what the results were. And I think it's just, you know, and I think, you know, if it's snake draft, auction draft, whatever it may be, you know, you just sometimes, you know, get pressured into taking guys that you just feel like you can't pass up. And that's, I think, the one thing, you know, there's a lot of times where a guy's falling and you're like, man, why does he keep falling? Then you just like feel like I got to take him. You know, I think one guy, as I kind of look, you know, at the Yahoo rankings, trying to think about who could be that guy, you know, in this case, and I, you know, really thinking about it, and like a guy like Teoscar Hernandez, you know, he's a guy that's like, okay, you know, he did really good. And it's one of those things where it's like, you know, in our case, you know, fifth round goes by, sixth round goes by, seventh round goes by, and he's just still chilling there. And it's like, you know, what do you do? It's like, no one else is taking him. Can I keep waiting? It's like, just because I think it goes back to the whole, you know, we're looking at such a short sample size of some guys that, you know, did really well. And it's like, you just turn into that, you know, do I believe in him? It's like, it's one of those, I'll give you a comparison. Who would you rather have, Hernandez or JD Martinez?
I mean, based on 2019, you would take
TR. And I'm just saying, like, if you like are in a spot, like you need an outfielder, Hernandez and JD Martinez are there.
I'm honestly thinking, so I wouldn't go high on Teoscar, but where's JD Martinez ranked? I don't see
84.
84?
Yeah. So I'm not comparing two guys that are like, you know, 70 ranking spots apart, but like two guys that are going higher than him just because of name recognition, better track record as a whole. I think, you know, a lot of people are going to take what he did last year. I think that, like, think about rankings. I think that's a perfect guy to say, you know, who's going to really probably have more output than what his rank is showing. It's like, you know, he had 7 home runs, batted .213, you know, RBI and run production. His run production is always pretty minimal.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's one of those guys, like, he's not going to do that again.
No. But now face value, I'd take JD.
Right.
I mean, just for the street name, everybody, I mean.
Exactly. And I don't think that's always the best approach to go, but I think there is a lot of guys like
that's a good
JD case where, you know, people are going to look back at, you know, oh, here's the new shiny toy versus kind of, the veteran that's, you know, I feel like I always look back at JD Martinez as one of those guys like, you know, lock it in, 30 home runs, 100 RBIs, you know, you're set kind of thing. You know, it's just basically like, you know, you get that, you know, you're just going to have to wait to see which weeks it comes through. It's not going to be a consistent basis, but that's the production that you will get overall.
Definitely. And that's one of those guys. So like Teoscar Hernandez wasn't even drafted. So like the league that we did, that 16 team dream team league, that was
great. I don't even think he was drafted in any leagues.
No, but like, I was just referencing one of the best leagues we've ever been a part of. That league, he wasn't even drafted, and I actually picked him up in free agency. And he
ended
up being the best player that's still on my roster or whatever roster that still occurs in that league. But
and maybe he could be one of those guys that I'm just still maybe like, you know, where he's at right now, I'm just behind still. Maybe I'm just not a firm believer in that production to sustain, because it's like, you look at Toronto, I'm just going to use Toronto as a reference here. It's like their lineup is loaded from a fantasy perspective. You know, like you already referenced Bo Bichette, but now George Springer there, Marcus Semien, you know, Marcus Semien 2 years ago, he was, you know, third in MVP. Like, you know, you have a lot of good players there. And it's like, you look, think about it, it's like, well, are we just going to say all these guys are, you know, going to be top 70 fantasy, you know, fantasy player? Like, is this just, you know, going to be the team that you need to like make sure you don't miss a piece of kind of thing? And I'm not sure, you know, some of those guys, like obviously I would love to invest in Toronto, but I think for me it's one of those things where it has to be the right price, and I'm not gonna, you know, reach or just based on, you know, Hernandez's sake. It's like, did well last year, you know, I need to see a little more. And so that I think for, you know, all the leagues that I'm in when it comes draft day in the next, you know, month or so, it's going to be one of those things like I won't have shares and we'll see if I regret it.
Yeah. Well, lucky for you, you don't have to worry about outfield. So that's
going to be. Well, yeah, in this league, I'm saying, you know, there's other leagues out there where, you know, when draft day comes around, it's like.
Yeah.
I just won't have shares. It's like, you know, I think the price tag seems too high based off, you know, ranking. Obviously, it's one of those things if he falls in drafts and it's like, maybe I might get a taste, but
yeah,
just think, you know, 72, you're basically putting him at, you know, roughly a six round grade. And that's a steep price tag.
Definitely is. While we're on that topic, so I like the take on, or like the strategy as far as going, comparing Teoscar and JD Martinez. I want to see your comparison on Yoan Moncada and Eugenio Suarez.
Whew. Ah, man, I don't even know where to start with that, because I was very high on Moncada. I think, you know, ever since he was in the Boston Red Sox system, I think, you know, he was this prospect where it's like, this guy is like the next big thing in baseball. And, you know, he's had flashes of that while he's been on the White Sox. And it's just one of those things where, you know, kind of comparing him to Suarez, where I think you've seen more constant production. I think with Moncada, you're still paying for, you know, that potential of him being that superstar player. You know, I think that's where I kind of get a little bit lost in the sauce in that case, where it's like, okay, you know, he's had one. I mean, he has only really played 2 seasons as a baseball player, like, you know, and with when you really factor in last year, he didn't, you know, his last year, I don't even want to look at his last year stats because they were bad. So it's like, you take that, you know, 50, 60 game sample, it's like, well, I don't even want to take that because it was so bad. But you have to look back at the year before, it's like, you know, but then, like, I think pretty much the year before that, it's one of those things where he wasn't that good either. So it's like, you know, where do we draw the line on Mankata, and, you know, what is he really valued at? And now with that team also having, you know, Eloy being, you know, the guy, you still got Grandal there, and it's just a really nice lineup in general to kind of, you know, figure. And then Tim Anderson's there. Matt Agrell is going to slowly make his way up to the team. So it's just, you think about it, it's like, you know, who's going to be the guy that eats? I think it's going to be Eloy at the end of the day. But, like, after that, who is the guy you want to own? And I don't think it'd be Yone in that case. So I'm kind of down on him. I wouldn't feel great having – I mean, he's what? He's probably like a 12, top 10, 12 third baseman. So it's like, you know, it's not like it's that bad, but it's like I wouldn't feel – I'd rather wait and draft a third baseman before I take Yone. But Suarez, I think I would rather have him than Mankata. I think, you know, you're just getting more production. I think, you know, it's a guy that has, you know, what? He almost hit 50 home runs a couple years ago. So it's like you have – the home run upside, which if you hit home runs and you can hit RBIs, and I like you already a lot because, you know, you show me what you can do. So I think the average comes with that. I just think he's just a more consistent player. I think, you know, it kind of goes almost back to the comparison I made with JD and Hernandez, where it's like, you know, besides Mankata's not the new shiny toy. Mankata's the guy where it's like, what the hell is this guy going to do? So I think you're just taking on a lot of risk when you take Mankata. I think with Suarez, it's just a more, you know, safe play. And I think you just, you know, you're setting yourself up for more success with Suarez. What do you think?
I think as far as floors go, Suarez would be the guy. So I think if I was like, I mean, if I'm there, I need a third baseman. If I'm drafting within that range, that's kind of the guy that I would go, no brainer. But I do like the upside of Yone, but we haven't seen it. And I know that injuries have continued to lurk along his career. And I think with Eugenio, given he has slower starts and has throughout his career, I do think that he always provides that pop one shape or form. I know he batted only 202 in the small sample in 2020. But I do think that, I mean, as far as some numbers goes, right, 15 homers, 38 RBIs in 2020 with 198 at Beavs. Like, that's the guy that I would think, safe to say. Mankata's going to be out. He's going to have lingering injuries. He's kind of soft, in my opinion. I feel like he's been out more times than needs to be. A lot of his injuries seem to be exaggerated. And I think that's one guy that is more hands-off, and I would go Eugenio, no question. So,
and I think with Yone, too, as that team's gotten better, and then I even totally forgot the Adam Eaton signing. So that's another guy where it's like, okay, you have him there. So it's like, okay, that means Mankata's only going to drop in the lineup. So you also have to factor in Luis Robert's, you know, going to be up and coming as well. I can't believe I forgot to not mention his name because he's arguably, you know, the one guy on the team that can make it, you know, even better. So it's like the more he drops in the lineup, it's like, the more I don't want him at all. So it's like, I think, you know, his ranking that they're flashing, I think he's going to be the guy that drops even farther.
Definitely. And that's one guy that if you're looking at the Chicago White Sox lineup, little to no shares, that'd be the guy as far as Yoan Mankata. Because, I mean, even Abreu last year being the MVP season, there's a lot to like in that lineup, and that's one of those guys.
Yeah, another guy, Ian. Like, I just blanked. For some reason, I blanked on the whole white, like, all the really good players. I didn't even list any of them. So it's just one of those things, like, we're focused on Yone. It's like you list all those guys, like, where does he fit in the script? And it's like the farther, if he's batting 7, 8, or 9, it's like the more, like, if you're going to be wasting, you know, I won't say wasting, let's just say using, you know, rounds 5 through 7 equity on a guy like him, it's like, forgot, like, that's batting 7, 8, 9. I'm out. Like, as they say, saying Shark Tank, I'm out.
Definitely. And I totally agree with that. I think I don't know if I wasn't sure. See how you feel about this going into an Eloy Jimenez and Yordan Alvarez comparison, or we go into an outfield comparison with different teams. How do you feel? What do you want to do?
I mean, the Eloy Yordan one is kind of, I don't have a biased take on either one of them. I think they're both great players. So I think they're both in their their point in their careers where they're still figuring out a lot of stuff. It's where, you know, I think if you have either player, you're going to be in a good position. That's my only kind of take on it right now. I don't know kind of the deep analytics of both on. I know Jordan, I mean, I think they both strike out quite a bit over their careers. So it's one of those things where they both have a lot of cleaning up to do. But I think if I were to just pick one right today, I'd probably lean Aloy. But I think we can go the other way in the outfielders.
Perfect. So with that, I wanted to bring to light the elephant in the room, and that is Randy Arozarena. I think that having 64 ABs and currently ranked in all Yahoo formats, 53, him and another guy who has a similar rank, which is in his tier, and that is George Springer on the new team, the Toronto Blue Jays. So I don't know who your guy is, but I want to see who you like more in that situation, where George Springer is ranked 46 and Randy Arozarena is ranked 53.
Yeah, no, I think obviously Springer's leaving Houston. So it's kind of one of those things. It's like, what is going to happen as he leaves the Houston Astros? I think, you know, he's going to sustain his batting leadoff spot, which I think for him is the most important from his fantasy appeal perspective. I think, you know, as we kind of highlighted on the Toronto, this is almost turning into like a Toronto exit velocity podcast, how much we're highlighting them. But I think you're just getting much more of a Springer. I think, you know, Randy, he's one of those guys where, yes, his playoffs did take off, but I think you just have to go back and visit the idea of, you know, what do you think he really can be? And I just, you know, he did so well, but like, maybe he's just a guy where he just comes around in the playoffs. You know, that's, I think, the one thing. You know, there are a lot of guys when it comes to, you know, they have these flash seasons in the playoffs. You know, it's like they become this star, but like doesn't always translate to more of a, you know, I'm going to be, in this case, a fantasy baseball star as well. I think the one thing I think about when it comes to playoffs, maybe I'm always just bitter in this case, is I remember when I'm a Brewers fan and, when the St. Louis Cardinals won the World Series, or when they beat the Brewers and then won the World Series, I believe it was, we went out and decided to sign Jeff Suppan. It was like, oh, you know, Jeff Suppan won World Series MVP. You know, he's this next big pitcher, comes to the Brewers, and he absolutely does nothing. So it's like one of those things, maybe I'm just bitter in that aspect where, you know, if guys just do blow up in the playoffs, and I just don't look at it that way, but I think when it's all said and done, I'm leaning towards Springer just because I want a guy that's, you know, has the track record for sure, batting leadoff. I'm not sold on Tampa Bay's team as a whole. I just like a guy that's going to be batting in a nice lineup versus a guy that you're saying, oh, he was good in the playoffs, you have to draft him high. So,
yeah, and that's one thing. So, like, George Springer, new city, new lineup, batting at the top. Honestly, his lineup, as far as runs scored goes, is going to be very favorable if he gets on base. Definitely like him. But Randy Arozarena, you don't know what he's going to produce. And I don't know, is like, I don't know what happened wherever he's from. As far as like,
well, that's the other thing.
The offseason antics. Like, I know Miguel Sano went down with the same similar scenario, or like things happened in South America. And then, like, there's a risk of, like, maybe not even playing a certain amount of games. And, like, playoff production, yes, he was just, like, God's gift to earth. But, I mean, to pick him first, second round in our league, like, you want stability. You want consistency. And, like, a guy that was traded from the Cardinals to Tampa, I'm hands off. I'm all Springer.
You know. And the one thing is, like, if you're – and I think the one thing big about, like, this comparison and just thinking about outfield and another, you know, just, like, a bigger scope of things is I'm going to throw out my boy. I'd rather have – I'd almost, like, you put me on this guy, so I can't take all the credit for this guy, you know, about 2-3 years ago. But I'd rather wait and take Dylan Carlson than fucking Randy. Like, that's a guy where it's, like, I want a guy, like, you know, where – like kind of it's like the hidden upside almost aspect of the thing. It's like, you know, people are, you know, it's like not this guy that, you know, just catapulted the rankings because of, you know, this very large surge he had. I'd rather, you know, wait and kind of sit back in the weeds and use, you know, that equity on maybe starting pitching. Because, you know, when you think about Randy, you're basically drafting him in kind of the terms of maybe like a Glasnow, a Woodruff, you know, maybe not. I mean, if you have a guy like Zach Gallen fall, I don't see that maybe happening. But you're really taking him around a lot of, you know, more kind of established players, potentially, you could say. Or more that I just have more appeal towards too, I think, you know. Because it's almost like you mentioned Eloy and Yordan. Well, Yordan and Randy are ranked right next to each other. Mm-hmm. So it's like, in this, you know, case, it's like, I'm taking Yordan and I'm not even thinking about that.
No, you don't even think, just because he's already had that experience regular season at that level, whereas, like, Randy's basically just suited up for, like, 3 weeks and then played the playoffs and killed it. Like, you don't know.
I'd even take Christian over him based on, you know, if I'm taking an outfielder in that ranking. I just think, you know, you can't base all of your emphasis on wanting to take this guy just because he had a great World Series or a great playoffs or however you want to classify it. I think, you know, let's see what the, you know, a regular season brings. And then it's like, you know, we can look back at this and say, yep, we were right. Or, you know, next year he's ranked 24th. Like, that's the way I look at it.
Exactly. And you'd be fine with that too, you know. You just move on.
Yeah, exactly. I can live with that. You know, there's like some guys where it's like, you know, that one's stung, but I can live with him, you know, climbing me more because he's already ranked, you know, in the like close to top 50. It's like, so that's just not me. I'm not. Outfield is such a deep position already. I look at it as if you either, you know, get those stud outfielders or you kind of sit back and hopefully hit the guys that, you know, really. Because like a guy like Kyle Lewis last year. Yeah. It was an absolute animal. He wasn't drafted by anyone. And, you know, he's still ranked around 135. I'd rather, you know, roll the dice on a guy like him.
Get him late. Also,
or even Ramon. I'm a very high Ramon.
For sure.
Guy. I'd rather take those guys later than putting, you know, that investment in Randy.
For sure. I like your strategy. Another tier of, I guess, pick your guy scenario, Vlad Guerrero Jr. So this is a guy that I have zero shares of. I don't know if you have any shares in your fantasy leagues, but he's currently ranked in Yahoo 49th overall. Definitely lost a lot of weight, but obviously hasn't really delivered in his MLB career. So in the 60-game small sample in 221 ABs, he had 34 runs scored, 9 homers, and 33 RBIs with a .262 average. One guy I want to compare him to as far as like where we're going is with especially multi-position eligibility. That is DJ LeMahieu, my boy. So we have Vlad Guerrero Jr., young stud prospect phenom. His dad's a Hall of Famer, ranked 49th. And then we have DJ LeMahieu, fresh off a 6-year contract, going to be in the Bronx for the remainder of his career, but aging in his mid-30s now. So he's currently ranked 38. He has first, second, and third base eligibility, but he absolutely smashed last year in 2020. So he had 195 ABs, he had 41 runs scored, 10 homers, 27 RBIs, and batted 364. So if we're in the draft, we're thinking, so we have a keeper scenario, for example, or I mean any scenario. If you're win now, who do you take?
That's a good one. I'm really high on Vlad this year. I think it's one of those things where look back at his rookie season 2 years ago. He didn't get to really see a whole – because he didn't even get to play the whole year as well. So he kind of had a late start just based on call-up time because I know Toronto was really milking, you know, arbitration, whatever it was, just to kind of make sure, you know, they didn't screw themselves over when it comes to the contract negotiation side. And then last year, like you listed out the stats, they're not appealing whatsoever. I think a lot, and I just really think about, you know, how many players in baseball were really invested in the season last year. I think if you look across like the teams that were really good and, you know, that were able to get people to buy in and be like, yes, let's do this. You know, we know there's no fans, whatever it may be. And so it really kind of maybe from a Toronto side, just, you know, they just weren't fully there. And it's still a young team too. So they didn't have like that veteran presence that they will now with especially Springer and Semien. I really think comparing these guys is tough to me just because I'm also a big DJ stan, where to the point where I think they're both fairly disrespected on their ranking. That's where I want to start things off. I think, you know, these DJ, it's like, you look at DJ's stats over the last 2 years, the guy's finished top five MVP the last 2 years. Like, what does this guy need to do to, like, be even higher? You know, like, does he need to win MVP? And, like, even then, is he still going to be hanging, like, these 30, 40, you know, the late 30s, early 40s, you know, draft capital? It's like,
didn't you have
and the fact that he can play three different positions, you know, I don't always put, you know, how many positions a player can play as my, you know, kind of reason why I draft a guy, but like he just gives you the opportunity to really construct and really you like, you know, your lineup kind of thing. So
did you have him last year or who had him?
Yeah, no, I had him last year. It was awesome. Yeah. Like when, especially in the second base round,
what round? So like, again, we keep four guys. So we're drafting, basically we're starting our draft in the fifth round. So like what round did you take him really?
First or second? No, it was, No, it wasn't first. It was
this is a diamond in the rough. I think it was like second.
I actually don't know, because then I don't know if I took him second. I'd have to look back at things, but you know, it was one of those things where when I took him, I was like, I was happy I took him, just because, you know, a lot of people I know looking back was, and I know people all say, you know, well, he went from Coors to, you know, New York, which is like, you know, going from Stadium One to Stadium Two. Like, I'm pretty sure Yankee Stadium's, you know, the second best hitter park. But at the end of the day, you still got to produce. And it's like, you would also could say, it's like, you know, when people go to Yankee Stadium, they don't always have, you know, that luxury. Like, you know, he had no spotlight on him in Colorado. You know, he has all the spot. Like, a lot of guys go to New York and they kind of really shrink in that case. Yeah. So it's like, and the dude's just been arguably the best New York Yankee on the team. And sure. The dude's still like, you got guys like, you know, I don't know where Torres and Judge are off the top of my head on this sheet, but.
Dude, a guy, you know, like, what Stanton, we don't even talk about. It's crazy.
Yeah, exactly. I guess, you know, I just kind of did a quick search on Judge. He's 50th, so Stan's 115. And then where is Gleyber Torres? So I guess you really think about it, he is the highest ranked Yankee, which is really crazy because like if you'd have said, you know, all these guys are ranked behind. Actually, Luke Voit's the second highest ranked Yankee, I think.
So Luke Voit's ranked third hitter wise.
Yeah, behind LeMahieu and Judge. So it's like, he's getting the respect, but I still think the Yankees have one of the best lineups in baseball. So it's like, what makes – I think about it, it's like, you know, and obviously they play different positions, but, you know, what DJ has done, what makes in a redraft format Rafael – you know, Devers make – I'd rather have DJ than maybe over Devers in a redraft format.
Yeah.
I'd rather have him –
That's a topic. That's a topic that I can go head-to-head with. Just, I mean –
I love Devers. Yeah, like, yeah. I think Devers is special. I think, you know, he's, but like,
I just know that. So,
in redraft.
So, like, an Alex Cora connection. And that's why I think Devers had one of the worst years of his career last year, because, like, Alex Cora is now back with the Red Sox, and that's like his father figure in real life, real shit. So, I think that's going to bring back whatever he had in 2019. Given safer floor is probably DJ LeMahieu, given you just signed a 6-year contract. Maybe there's injuries there. Who really knows? And younger guy in Rafael Devers. But yeah, that's a hell of a comparison too. We can go there too.
Yeah, no, and then that's just like, there's so many guys where it's like, you know, where do you, like, what makes, like, I just don't get, you know, from a ranking perspective, it's like, what makes people want to, you know, go off of, you know, what, DJ has done, because it's,
yeah,
what he's done has been elite production, you know,
for sure.
So I think, you know, I mean, I love DJ on my teams. I mean, it's one of those guys where you're going to have to spend, you know, potentially. But I think on draft day, you know, Vlad, you're going to have to spend even higher equity on. I think Vlad's going to be that guy, is whatever his rank is, throw it out the window, because he ain't going at that spot. Like, no. I think Vlad goes at least 12 spots higher wherever he's ranked on whatever.
Yeah, it's the upside play, and I think
rightfully so. I think I think when it comes drafting in leagues that I'm in, I think, you know, especially, you know, and I'm a person that I like to target first base early, just because I think it's a dying position from a fantasy side. I'm not sure why it's been dying over the years, but it has been.
Yep.
You don't want to get yourself caught drafting Matt Olson when he bats 195 on the season, like he's Adam Dunn 2.0. But I think they're both great players, and if you give me either one on draft day, I'm a happy person.
Heck yeah. So I think this is what we're gonna do. I'm gonna figure this whole thing out as a host. We're gonna pause this show, and I'm gonna bring on a special guest. Does that sound good, Jason?
Yeah, do it.
Well, Jason, I got bad news. Our guest appearance is much like Britt tonight. That's MIA. So I guess we're going to have to carry on the show without him. We're just going to have to just move on. And I think what we're going to talk about is biggest trade that went on this past week. And a lot of people, as far as value goes, are kind of unsure as to what the Rockies of Colorado actually acquired. And the guy that the Cardinals acquired, and that is Nolan Arenado. What do you think? What's your first takes on the trade, how it went down? Personally, I think it was cheap as ever, as far as what he offers, even defensively without a bat. But then immediate contender in the NL Central. But I think just hear your take. What do you got?
Yeah, no, I think this trade was just something that's been boiling up to happen. I think, you know, no one's saying Nolan Arenado is not, you know, is worthless, or, you know, like, because when you think about it, it's like, what did the Rockies get back? And it's like, they virtually got nothing. I mean, the Rockies aren't even eating money at this point, you know, just to get Arenado off their books. I think the one big thing that they got a little nervous about, and it kind of, and this is where I just get a little confused in the deal, was because Arenado had an opt-out after this year. So it's like, well, they wanted to get something before they could get nothing, and they really still did get nothing from a, you know, a prospect perspective. It's not like the, you know, they landed anyone, you know, worthy.
Yeah, they didn't land Gorman or the Libertor. Yeah. That's now it kind of makes sense, because that's actually something that I didn't know, or I didn't look much into, is that whole opt-out clause. Because honestly, that's why they probably pulled that trade, because they didn't want to give up those big-time prospects, and that's justifiable. Like, why would you throw those away when you might even not retain them after a year?
Yeah, and that's like, so like, you know, the fact that, you know, he had the opt-out, but then the fact they still had to eat, I think it was close to $50 million. So it's like, that's where I didn't dive too deep into Arenado's contract to like state, like, you know, if he opted out, how much money they were at loss. Because I think they, no matter what, we're in for 30-some million based on his average salary. So it's like, well, man, you just look and it's like, what are the Rockies doing? But at the end of the day, this is the Rockies, dude. Like, they had their small window that I don't even know if it was really of a window of competing, where, you know, they had a really nice batting lineup, but, you know, their pitching was really, you know, not there. So it's kind of like, that's Coors Field for you, too. Like, no one's, you know, can be a really good pitcher at Coors Field. That's just how, you know, that's the nature of the beast. But when I think about the trade as a whole, from, you know, it's great for the Cardinals. Like, you know, you basically, what you just did was, now you've upgraded to having Nolan Arenado. Like, if you're acquiring Nolan Arenado at the end of the day, you did a great trade. Like, and especially the fact you didn't have to give up, you know, prime equity into your team to do it, you know, and the Cardinals can afford it. It's like, it's a good deal, because now you have a Gold Glover at the third place. So your defense already just improved tremendously. I mean, the Cardinals have always been known for a great defensive team, But now you have arguably the best. He was already the best NL defensive player in the league, and now you have him. So it's like, okay, we have him now. So I think the next part of it is, you know, I think the one thing where people start to think is, what is Arenado's production translate to at Busch Stadium? Or, you know, more of an NL, you know, playing those teams. And, you know, the splits are very worrisome. Like, I've always been a believer, like, you take a player away from Coors, you know, what do they do? Well, what did DJ LeMay do? You know, he did well. Obviously, he went to Yankee Stadium, so it's like, it's a little bit different. Maybe Busch Stadium's not Yankee Stadium, so it's that's kind of got to throw that in there. But the fact that people are like kind of gravitating, like, you know, he's gonna not gonna be like a top 50 player. It's like, I mean, that's kind of pushing the boundaries a little bit, I think. I mean, I know Ozuna and Goldschmidt, you know, guys that, you know, didn't do well, but like, I don't want to compare Albert Pujols and him, but Albert Pujols didn't seem to struggle at Busch Stadium, you know? No. Like, dude, he's one of the best players of all time. And
yeah, in our lifetime, especially.
He did well there. So it's like, I think Arenado is going to be fine. I don't think he's, you know, what is his rank, 22nd? He's not, in my eyes, he does take a couple steps back. If we were to ask the host of the show, Brent, he would tell you he probably takes 10 steps forward and he wins MVP this year. Yeah.
No steps back in Arenado.
But let me hear you. What do you think?
Honestly, like, yeah. So I like what you had to say about, like, the translation between teams. The one thing, so now he's just not – so you take out the 81 games he played at Coors and you put them into Busch Stadium. But also you think about all the BP he's going to take in that stadium. He's going to get acclimated. That's going to happen. The guy's a winner. The guy's got the glove. Given, let's put that aside because I don't want to bring that up over and over again, but the guy is a winner. And I think with a contending team, that changes his way about business. I think he's going to deliver. And I don't know, as far as him being 22, I kind of like it. It's reasonable. I don't think it's too early and I don't think it's too late. I think it's pretty solid as far as like where he should end the season as far as rankings go. And that's kind of why we do preseason ranks and how they kind of transpire throughout the year. But I think when we're comparing the three top third basemen in the league right now, as far as rankings, it's Jose Ramirez, Manny Machado, and Nolan Arenado. And when you think about those guys and their recent years of success, Nolan Arenado leads that pack in the last 2 to 3 years. He does, given the small sample of 2020, but all things aside, give in the whole Coors Field perspective, I personally might just take Nolan Arenado above those two, Jose Ramirez and Manny Machado. What do you think?
I would say.
So, okay.
No, I was just going to say, before you dig in Coors Field, I would still take Jose over.
You'd take Jose, even in that.
Oh, Jose, I think if you, besides that weird in 2019, that whatever happened, I don't know what happened in 2019.
Yeah.
He had that. It was almost, it wasn't even 2019. It was a 2018 second half that transitioned into 2019 first half. And then he snapped. Like, then he, like, all right, he went back to Jose Ramirez. Like, cause I remember, like, there's a point in 2019, I could have, in the, you know, the handful of leagues that I'm in, I could have got Jose on the low. And I was like, dog, like, I don't want this guy. This guy's bad. Like, but then I was like, I messed up because this guy is elite. Like, this guy, and I'm curious where he's going to go because he's next on the chopping block for the Indians. So, like, I'm curious where he ends up going. But if I were to say before the trade, I'd still say Jose won. Manny, Arenado, pick coin flip, you know.
Yeah, no, that's just it, though. So, like, when I look at the top three, as far as Yahoo rankings go, I mean, Jose, the 2019 year was questionable at best. And, yes, what he put together in a 60-game sample size is great. But what does he have to build around at Cleveland? And then when you look at the Cardinals, I just think they're winning them. Like, they're always winners, dude. Like, they just put together a winning squad every year They remain competitive. You can look at roster resource. You can look at their starting lineup. I just think they will deliver, and his numbers are going to be solid. I think Nolan Arenado is just going to put I'm not taking the reins.
You drinking the Brent Kool-Aid? Do you have the Brent Kool-Aid like next to you right now? Are you like Brent in the room? Like
I don't know how many head fire. It's all a dream beers I've had today, but it comes down to, I guess, those three. So like that, and that's just rankings. That's just kind of my conversation piece as far as like how I'd rank those guys. I probably wouldn't be targeting. So if I'm the 11th pick in a redraft, I'm not picking Jose. I'm going to sit.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, like I'm not, he's not the 11th top player in league. I wouldn't take Jose 11th overall. So that's kind of my perspective. So I would be far more comfortable taking 22 Nolan Arenado on the reach on the second round.
Because obviously Yahoo's not factoring
not like 23rd or what is that, 22, whatever, I don't know what pick that is, but like I would take him like late second round. That's kind of how,
even with the trade now,
what's that,
even with him in Arizona, I mean St. Louis now,
yeah.
Oh no, and I mean
He's turning 30 in 7 days it is now. And I just think that he's a winner. And I think he wants to prove those haters wrong, because again, and I hate to say this because it's literally Brent talking right now, and he's probably passed out three sheets to the wind, but that's just his guy. Now I look at those rankings though, and I kind of get, and I don't see it. I'm like, I'm not reaching. And if I'm probably the guy that's taking him at like pick 30, 31. I'm definitely not taking him at 22. If that's any explanation on how I draft, like I'm not like coveting that pick. I would definitely take a pitcher. That's just. No.
And I think now, you know, with the trade, you know, he's not going first round. As Brent would think he's going. If Brent was in your draft, he's going first round. So like you would want Brent in your draft room on draft day in like those formats where Brent would then just take Nolan Arenado because he will die on that stake.
Yep.
But second round, once again, I can't make the pick. I just think there's just too much, you know, there's just too much talent there for me to wanna take on, you know, the uncertainty of, you know, playing 81 games at Busch Stadium, like you said. I mean, yes, he will play, you know, around 10 games at Miller Park. You know, he's going to play at also some other, like, since he's, I think, you know, in the middle of the pack when it comes to hitter friendly and stuff like that. So, and then, you know, he's also going to play at Wrigley, you know, and if he catches, you know, bad weather, you know, wind blowing in at Wrigley, it's like, well, then you lose 5 games of, you know, potential there. I think for me, where I would have to find myself taking Arenado would be, first off, did I take a third baseman? If I did, Nolan's already off my board. So if like I drafted Jose, Manny, we'll use those two as my first ones. Because then you start getting to discussion of, you look at the draft boards, it's like, well, if he's not 22nd, he's now in the 30 range. And now you've entered a range of Devers, Bregman, Rendon, DJ, like how, and I think the way this, based on, you know, Twitter or whatever it may be, the perception I got was Arenado's ranked below those guys now, or like ranked higher than those guys now. Like, yeah. You know, the way I took it was how people looked at this trade was he's the like in that tier of like, it's like after we're, I mean, Vlad put that disrespect 49 still, but on Yahoo anyways. He's like, you know, that probably 40 to 50 range based on how people took this trade. Because if people are taking Mankato over Arenado or Biggio over Arenado, now we just hit a new, you know, thing. And yeah. It's not like saying, I think the one thing we have to visit then is the hill that Brent was willing to die on Justin Turner versus Arenado. And it's like, you kind of pull up their stats. You know, the people that defended Turner weren't wrong. Like, really, like, besides, like, RBIs and home runs, which when you play half your career at Coors Field, you know, And I think that's the part that was bothering Brent in that take so much was he was trying to emphasize, you know, home runs and RBIs too much in discussion when it was saying hitter. Hitter is different than power hitter. They're two different perceptions. Like, you look at him, like, you could argue Justin Turner is a better hitter. Like, there's no, like, their averages are, you know, I'm not going to dive too deep into analytical perspective, but, like, their averages are right next to each other.
Yeah.
On base percentage, I'm pretty sure Justin Turner is better. So it's like, I don't know how that wasn't like a hot take. It's like
just realistic. And like, yeah, numbers, that's the thing.
You know, Justin Turner's never plays full seasons. That's just what it is.
Numbers don't lie. The numbers are there for a reason, right? Yeah. And that's kind of what we want to compare it on is that, and that's what all the StatCast guys and Brent would say, the StatCast guys.
Yeah, the StatCast. No one even said StatCast that whole Twitter thread. And he says the StatCast guys. Like, Brent said StatCast guys besides you.
But I think that's what it all comes down to. And I think when, I mean, imagine Justin Turner in a AL uniform. I think any team, he would be solid at age 34.
Yeah, right? I mean, you look at this guy, and I think the one thing that actually sucks for Turner is he didn't come up onto the scene really until he was like 26, 27.
Yeah. No, he's a little. Yeah, I remember seeing him, Justin Turner, in the line at Hollywood Studios at the Tower of Terror. And so they were playing, it was spring training time, and he was on the Mets at the time, and his wife or fiance, whatever. And it was me and Jenna. You met Jenna, Jason?
Yeah.
Yeah. So, like, it was me, Jenna, and her friend. I can't remember her name. Apologize. We were waiting in line, and Justin Turner was ahead of us. And he, again, he's on the Mets. And I was like, dude, that's just – and he had that big, burly red beard. And I asked for his autograph or actually just asked for a photo because that's just how I did my business at that point in time. But, like, he was nothing at that in Met, right? He's on the Mets. Do you remember any statistical – like seasons he provided on the Mets? No, because he did it all with the Dodgers. But fun fact, that was it. We were just we waited. He was a patron. He was waiting for like an hour and a half with us, grinding. We were doing absolutely nothing in that fucking line. But it was
yeah. Cool. I mean, that had to have been what like so that was probably you know what 2011, 2012, or before you know anyone like that's what I'm saying. He just had come up on the scene.
Came out of nowhere, rumor, and now he's getting paid. Hopefully, that's kind of a topic of discussion. I don't know. I mean,
could probably actually take out his Met stats from like if you were to just look at then, you know, obviously take away the home runs, RBI, all those stats because you know, Arenado's gonna blow him out in those stats because Arenado's been you know, producing at a younger age and all that stuff. But if you were to take that from just like those, you know. Who is a better hitter? I think it's Turner in that case. Like just looking at average on base, you know, like from that perspective, it's not saying, you know, and this is not taking away from Arenado. Like Justin Turner is just a good baseball player. Like he just has never been healthy to really showcase, you know, what his true potential is.
I know. And I think
that's the thing I think we've actually been, you know, that's what sucks for like baseball fans is like we haven't got the, you know, I think you could argue Justin Turner is a very underrated player because we never appreciate how good of a player he is.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you say, you know, like I think you mentioned before we talked actually when we were kind of just shooting the shit before the show and saying, you know, Justin Turner's ranked 200, it's like, do I want Justin Turner as my second starting third baseman? No, I don't. Like, but like, you know, he's going to have those stretches throughout the season where he's going to have good weeks. Like, that's just what he does.
Yeah, no. And if he finds himself a util role full time.
And I think that's like the one thing that was taken away from Brent when he was fighting everyone on Twitter where he like people are saying it's like they're just saying like, and I didn't like referencing the 2020 year. I think that was a bad argument, like, you know, using 2020 as kind of the here's what they did last year kind of argument. I think that was, in my personal opinion, that's not a good argument. But if you were even like, I would have enjoyed, you know, if they said, you know, hey, we'll take, you know, what he's done as a Dodger. It's been Very good. I have it up right now. The guy's, you know, like his average would be probably 300 as a Dodger.
Yeah.
Like it's, you know, he's good. Like there's no taking that away from him. He's not a power. Like the thing is, I think the one thing, he's not a power hitter though. It's not like he's not going to give you 40 home runs ever like Arenado can, where, you know.
Yeah.
So I think the one thing, you know, when it's all said and done is as he leaves Coors, what happens now? You know, what do we see from an Arenado? Do we see a, like you said, a FU tour, like I didn't need Coors like you guys think I did? Or do we see the regression badly and, you know.
I would hate to see that, though. That's kind of one thing that would just suck. But I'm pretty sure he's going to be just playing. He's going to deliver. I don't know how aggressively he's going to deliver, but I don't think that he's going to be no slouch.
Because I think if you look at Goldschmidt, I just pulled up Goldschmidt now, you know, he still was able to produce 34 home runs at, you know, I don't know, obviously, in that. So he played 161 games his first year in St. Louis, hit 34 home runs. I don't know what those splits are exactly. But, no, I think he'll be fine. It's like, you know, it's just, I think the one thing is you just have to, instead of banking off, you know, high 30s, early 40s home runs, I think you just have to be closer to more of a, you know, 30 home run, 100 RBI season, which, hey,
I'll take that. Fantasy season. Yeah, I was going to say, we'll take that any day of the week.
Yeah, give me that. 280 average, sure. Like, so.
Yeah, why not? So as we dwindle down to our last couple of minutes here, is there anything that we missed that you want to touch up on, Jace? Or do you want to wrap it up? How do you feel?
I don't think there's anything. I mean, like I said, I haven't been able to dive too much into the Yahoo rankings, just kind of really see, you know, who pops off the most or stuff like that. I know you kind of, you know, when you asked me to jump on, I know you weren't prepared to, you know, have all of our topics aligned, you know, perfectly. But no, I think we were able to really take on without Brent being able to come on tonight. But no, I think we got to really cover, you know, just kind of some fun topics, some good player comparisons, and then obviously the fun Arenado versus
without the Brent take. So I think that would kind of
that's the part we were missing tonight. That's where I was like, when you said if I wanted to jump on with you and Brent, I was thinking,
yeah,
that's what I was looking for tonight, because I really wanted to
shame hear it. Yeah, he had too
I didn't want to see the Twitter fingers anymore. I wanted to see the voice behind the opinion. I wanted to see the heart and dedication behind it all.
I kind of just wanted to see the guy who goes all in on a guy, right? To back him
up. The guy literally said he's going to win MVP. So
I just want to see where that guy's at. And I just want to see his backing and some reasoning. But I guess he just couldn't deliver it on a Sunday night.
I mean, the one thing that will increase his MVP take, Will, he'll be on a winning team. So that's his one thing he could have said, where it's like, hey, if the Cardinals win the Central, if the Cardinals are the best team in the NL, get an MVP. But
yeah,
that's the one point. I just thought about that, you know, point now. He never said that was the point. He just said, like, he's going to prove everyone wrong. And it's like, well,
he has a lot riding on Nolan Arenado.
I just think it's a weird take in general, because it's like, what is it Nolan Arenado really have to do to prove people wrong? The dude's already proved he's a Gold Glove and a Silver Slugger. Like, it's not like he's, you know, it's not like he's Chuck Nasty taking away from Coors, where the splits are even worse. Yeah, Arenado. Like, Chuck Nasty has to retire a Rocky, because he can't play. I don't think he could play baseball on our team.
No, he's got to. He just got to ride it out in Colorado, regardless. No discounts. Just keep it in there and don't give up.
But I think the one thing, if we're talking just on before we do check out when they eventually trade Trevor Story, it'll be interesting to see what he's. But if you look at his splits, they're pretty even.
Pretty even. Yeah, that's one.
They're not like 50. Average basis points that like Arenado's are. I'm pretty sure they're, you know,
and that's interesting to see, like, the route of as far as like where the Rockies take it, because they could really like just shed everybody if they. I mean, that's kind of with the philosophy that they've already dumped Arenado. They're probably going to continue the trail, and you would only think or suspect that Trevor Story's on his way next. But if you look on the pitching side, I would suggest that Gray or Marquez is also on the move as well.
Yeah, sorry. they're not as light as I thought they were. He's 250 average away, 300 average home. Or wait, yeah, 300 average home. But like all the other stuff.
Yeah.
No, he it'd be interesting to see what Trevor Story's like away too. Cause
yeah.
And the one thing when it comes to like these guys that are, you know, if you're gonna turn fandom to, you know, if you're not truly a Colorado Rocky fan and you're gonna put all your eggs in a basket on being a fan of a player on the Rockies and they get traded, you gotta realize there's very good chance they're not good at I won't say they're not good anymore. They ain't good at. They aren't gonna be as good as they once were.
Yeah, no, that's for sure.
And I think that was the one thing I kept stressing to Brent. It's like, before you literally attack the whole Twitter world on Arenado, you better hope he. Bush Stadium's not the easiest park, but hey, we'll see what happens. I mean, guys have shown they can hit home runs there. So.
Yeah, definitely. Well, Jace, I appreciate your time tonight. Phil, he had big shoes to fill. Brent was not available, so you're basically like the main guy. So you stepped in beautifully, and you might be looking for another career, I think, after this take. So,
yeah, no, it's all good, brother. I'm glad you were able to get me on, and I'm glad we were able to talk some baseball for a bit. So,
for sure, yeah. Well, baseball is just around the corner if all things proceed in the right direction. So thank you all for visiting and listening, and I hope to see you all listening next week. Thanks again, Jace.
Thanks, Jordan. See ya.